Well, the lunar module pilot on Apollo 16 is another one of our deep south part of the United States crew. In fact, all of you, as we've mentioned before, will be talking with southern drawls, and that may egg me on just a bit too, Charlie.
Right. That's
Charlie
fine.
Duke, the lunar module pilot. Where are you from originally?
My home is in Lancaster, South Carolina. My folks still live in Lancaster. Rhett, I was born in Charlotte, North Carolina, but I claim South Carolina's home.
You know, they kid me about my southern drawl sneaking out when during EVAs or excited parts of space missions, the boys back in the office say that my southern drawl comes out too. Well, you guys are not going to be any help to me this time at all.
I can imagine. Mine is a little bit less subdued than yours, but more subdued than my brother's. But I still talk like I'm from the South, even though we've been out of it on assignment for a number of years.
You know, a lot of people I've met overseas say that that's the one sectional accent in the United States that's most difficult for them to understand. People in Britain, in India, wherever English is spoken around the world, so we may have a little job to interpret for them.
Well, I hope that I can pronounce my words slowly during this interview and clearly.
No, I'm thinking about during that lunar surface activity. We're going to depend upon Tony England to translate for you.
Okay. Well, hopefully, you know, I got kidded a lot on when I was a Capcom on Apollo 10. Everybody from my hometown wrote letters and said, we enjoyed it so much. It was the first time we ever understood what was going on.
Back in South Carolina.
That's right, in South Carolina.
Well, where did you go to school? Where did you get your formal education?
Well, I graduated from high school at a prep school called Admiral Farragut Academy in St. Petersburg, Florida.
Then I went directly
into the Naval Academy and got a bachelor's degree from the Naval Academy in 1957.
Was that in aeronautics?
Well, it was in naval science, really.
Naval science.
That's a general engineering degree in naval science. Then the Air Force sent me back to school in 1962 for 2 years to MIT, and I got a master's degree in aeronautics there in 1964.
How old are you now?
I'm 36.
And you're married, and how many children
have you? I have a wonderful wife I'm very much in love with, and two fine boys.
How old are the boys?
Boys, one just turned 7, and the other one will be 5 first of May.
Are they old enough to be space nuts?
They like to build rockets and things like that, and they like to watch the liftoff of the Saturns. They've seen a couple now. Charles, I don't think, the oldest one, doesn't want to be an astronaut, but the young one wants to be an astronaut, though.
Okay, they're going to be watching Daddy anyway on the moon, aren't they?
Yes, fortunately, the EVAs occur early enough in the evening so that they can at least stay up and watch the first part of it, so I'm thankful for that.
How did you get into flying then after your education?
Well, at the Naval Academy, after about my third year, I decided that I wanted to fly, but to be a naval aviator, you had to go to sea, and I just did not like sea duty. Now, that sounds strange from a guy that went to the Naval Academy, but I hated sea duty, and I decided that if I was going to be a pilot, then it better be in the Air Force. So I volunteered for the Air Force, which at that time you could do.
Jim Irwin did this too, didn't he?
Yes, sir, he did.
Who was
Tom Stafford,
a lunar module pilot on Apollo 15.
Right. Tom Stafford was another. Uh-huh. Don Eisley. We had quite a few. Bill Anders. There were quite a few of us that went to the Naval Academy, ended up in the Air Force.
Uh-huh. And you flew hot jets?
Yes, I was in Germany for 3 years at the Ramstein, and loved my tour over there and got to see a lot of Europe and enjoyed it very much. Came back to MIT, and then after that went to Edwards, to the test pilot school.
Is that where you became interested in also eligible to enter the astronaut program?
Right. We had after graduation from test pilot school, I stayed on as an instructor. And I thought I'd missed being an astronaut by a couple of years. I figured that I had been a little bit too young and immature and inexperienced to get selected. And all, lo and behold, about a month after I graduated from test pilot school, NASA announced a call for another group, and I was very lucky.
At least you had that 1,500 hours you needed, and you had the application in.
That's right, and was after a pretty arduous selection process. Deke called one day and said that...
Deke Slayton.
That's correct. The president, still my boss, called and said that we had been selected, and I immediately jumped up on the roof of the house and shouted it to the world that I was in the program, and I've never been as happy in my life.
And we're going to hear an ebullient and lively Charlie Duke all over the lunar surface.
I hope so. I hope we can keep our composure. Not get too serious. I'm really not a very serious guy, though we have trained very hard for the program, and I think we're very well qualified. I hope that I can keep my sense of humor on the lunar surface.
We expect to hear that, Charlie.
I hope so.
Good luck to you. We'll be listening.
Thanks, Rhett.
Charlie Duke, Lunar Module Pilot, Apollo 16. This is Rhett Turner. Charlie, how do you see the first overall first excursion? What are the most important things you're going to do the first time out, that first 7 hours on the moon?
Well, the first is getting out of the hatch.
You got to back out.
That's right. After that, and getting onto the surface to what will be the greatest thrill of my life. It's business right away and to work, and unstowing the lunar rover is very important to us for our future geology training.
Very important, yeah.
So we'll have to get it off right away and make sure it checks out. Then after that is our experiments package deployment. I have the lunar surface drill to do, which was the same experiment Dave Scott had.
Now, they switched it around among pilots for this mission than from the one
that's
right,
Apollo 15. Primarily because we had to go, due to the problems that Dave Scott had, we went to a longer stem on the very first probe. Mm-hmm. And this stem is 54 inches long with a 17-inch drill, which means a reach height of 71 inches. That new probe is about a meter and a half long, and when you put the drill on the top of it, it's almost 2 meters.
Mm-hmm.
We make it a meter and three quarters long.
Mm-hmm.
And so that means that the taller the man, the easier he has to reach the handles of the drill, which actuate the drill. So John felt like he would be tottering on instability reaching that high, so it was given to me to do that experiment.
Yeah, John is, how tall are you?
I'm 6 feet tall, and John's about 5'9 or 5'10.
Mm-hmm. So the taller man could handle the drill
easy,
better.
Yes, uh-huh, mm-hmm. And be more stable. So that's my job now.
Mm-hmm.
On Apollo 17, they will have a drill also, and it's going to be back to the commander since Gene Cernan is the tallest man on that flight.
Uh-huh. Okay, what else about the ALSEP?
Well, John has three experiments that he's doing while I'm performing the drill. He has a surface magnetometer that he's putting out, a passive seismometer for moonquakes, and an active seismometer that he will be deploying, which is, when I say active, I mean that he will be firing charges, small explosive charges, under this little foot pad that he carries with him along a series of listening devices.
Mm-hmm. We'll be talking about the thumper.
That's
and
right. The
geophones.
Thumper and the geophones. That's
mm-hmm.
correct.
You'll be describing it as the thumper.
Right. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. And it'll be called a thumper, and he will be firing the thumper along the geophone line, so that mm-hmm. they will get a real time feel for the underlying material in our landing site.
Mm-hmm. This is common to prospecting and oil drilling examinations.
That's
around
correct.
The Earth,
uh-huh. They can then determine what's below the surface down to probably a few kilometers with our small charges.
Uh-huh. And then after you leave, these mortars will be fired out some distance.
They go out a mile, yes. Mm-hmm. So we'll get a bigger explosion and cover a greater area, and they can then extrapolate their data mm-hmm. to a few kilometers anyway around
uh-huh.
the moon.
What else do you see as highlights of that first EVA?
Well, we're going to man the rover after the first 4.5 hours and go about a kilometer and a half out to the west to a crater that we've named Flag Crater, which is about 280 meters in diameter and about 60 meters deep.
Is that an impact crater?
Yes, it is, we feel. And it has excavated into the Cayley Formation, which is the primary unit that we will be sampling on in our landing area, immediate landing area, and the purpose is to sample the Cayley with depth based on the impact nature of the crater, and then to return to about halfway back to the limb, in other words about three quarters of a kilometer, to sample another crater about similar size.
Mm-hmm.
This will give us a distribution in the Cayley of over a kilometer, and will give us a chance to check out a unit for its distance horizontally across the mm-hmm. surface.
Well, the bulk of the first EVA then is taken up, time-wise, is taken up in deploying the experiments package.
That's correct. First 4.5 hours, right? Mm-hmm. And then after that, we go into geology, and we'll have about 2 hours of geology.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thanks, Charlie,
sure.
for telling us about the first EVA.
You heard it.
Charles Duke, Lunar Module Pilot, Apollo 16. This is Rhett Turner. Charlie, during the second EVA, what all will you be doing, and what are the most important things to be accomplished?
Well, again, we'll be getting the rover in shape to go to drive to the south to a mountain that we've named Stone Mountain after a very predominant spot in Georgia. Then the primary objective is to climb Stone Mountain. About 700 feet up is our objective. And that will be, we will drive directly to our first stop mm-hmm. up on the flank of Stone Mountain.
Mm-hmm. That's up some 250 meters.
That's correct. Yeah. 250 meters up will be our first stop on a little terraced ledge as we see it in the photographs. The objective there is to sample the mountain, so to speak, of what the mountain is made of, which is what the geologists call the Descartes Formation, which covers about 4% of the front side of the moon. We will sample there, spend almost an hour doing sampling tasks, taking pictures, turning the TV on for the public and for the geologist. And after that hour, we will come back down the mountain with two or three intermediate stops. We will then proceed westward along a crater called Stubby Crater, which is oblong in shape that very well could be a volcano, but mm-hmm. we will find out when we get there.
Mm-hmm.
We will stop on the flank of Stubby Crater to sample that material and to sample some material that has been thrown out from a large crater further to the south, about 3 kilometers, which we will not be able to visit.
Mm-hmm.
We will sample that material. Hopefully
that's the ray of one of these
that's
craters.
That's correct, yeah, Rhett.
Material.
It's the South Ray Crater, mm-hmm. and on the photographs you can see this material coming across our stop.
Mm-hmm.
We might not be able to see it, but we're going to pick up every rock that we can find, and I'm sure we'll sample it.
Are you going to be able to bring back a greater load of rocks than in previous missions?
We're a little bit skinnier than the Apollo 15 crew, and we have a good engine, so we're going to be able to at least bring back the difference in our weight in rocks. We have about 190 to 200 pounds capability, and if we come back with more than that, we might be able to go as high as 220 or 230, we hope.
Uh-huh.
After that final stop there at South Ray on Stubby Crater, we have a few more intermediate stops to further sample the Cayley. And then it's back to the limb after 7 hours of geology.
Correct me if I'm wrong now. This whole area that you will traverse in the rover is expected to be full of big stones and lumps all over the place, isn't it?
We can see those in the photographs. Hopefully they will not be as predominant, so predominant that we have trouble navigating and driving the rover. We hope that the boulders will be such that we'll be able to navigate around and over them if necessary. The mm-hmm. rover has a good ground clearance, so we can of about 0.5 meter, so we can probably get over a few good sized rocks. Uh-huh.
Now, in this lunar highlands area, which Apollo 16 is the first to visit, a real true highlands area, what's the importance of the Stone Mountain projection there?
Well, it's probably a volcanic unit that either is late in the lunar history or early in the lunar history, depending on the geologist you talk to. The importance is sampling this unit that has never been sampled before and covers 4% of the front side of the moon. It never been sampled before. And it is volcanic in nature, we feel, and will fill in a major gap in this dynamic history of the moon, which is now quiet.
Thanks very much, Charlie Duke,
sure,
for describing the second EVA. Charles Duke, Lunar Module Pilot, Apollo 16. This is Rhett Turner. On the third EVA, you will drive north, won't you, Charlie?
Correct, Rhett. We will, after a good rest period between EVA 2 and 3, third day on the surface, we will proceed northward about 5 kilometers to our major objective, which is a large crater that is apparent on the photographs that is about a kilometer in diameter and is excavated to a depth of 200 meters into the lunar surface. Now, there are some tremendously large blocks on the rim of this crater. And these blocks have been excavated down from the depth of 200 meters. So we can, by just chipping off samples from these large blocks, sample material that is 200 meters deep under the area we're standing. Mm-hmm. So it's a very unique sample, and it's the largest crater that will be visited in the Apollo program.
Now, it's possible that this is going to be a difficult area to reach in the rover, isn't it?
That's correct, due to the large blocks that we see.
Won't know till you get there and try to navigate it.
That's
though,
right. But we have a great driver in John Young, and I'm sure he'll be able to round or leap him with a single bound or whatever he's going to have to do, but we should be able to make it.
You think you're going to feel comfortable in the other seat there with this driver?
Huh? I'll keep my eyes closed.
And well, what else up around the ray? You're going to spend a couple hours there, aren't
yes,
you, on
it's
the
a
edge
very,
of this crater?
If we can make it to the rim, we'll spend a couple of hours there. And it's unique because of the depth of the samples, plus the radial distribution of samples might change. And we want to get some stereo photographs into the crater, which should be very unique, in that the angle of the walls of the crater are so steep that there couldn't be loose debris there. It has to be rock in place. And this is a unique find on the moon. Apollo 15 was the first to see that at the Hadley Rill. And we should be standing on top of some massive rocks in place. And we hope to photograph and then be able to relate our samples that we select on the rim back to the units that we see in the crater.
Would you like to go down into that
no,
thing?
No, I don't think so. The walls are so steep, I'm afraid we'd have a tough time getting back out again.
How steep are they expected
to be? Well, they're about up to 60 degrees in some spots. So it's almost a vertical drop.
Oh, boy. Do you think you may be able to get the rover up close enough to shoot the TV camera down in there so that we might see it live?
I think so. We, as I say again, based on real-time decision of we don't want to expend too much time just driving up to the rim.
Mm-hmm.
Our primary objective will be fulfilled if we can sample some of the blocks. Mm-hmm. So we will walk to an area where we can sample a block, and if we don't get into the rim, then we don't make it.
Well, after North Ray, then, you go over and try to sample another piece of a mountain escarpment there, don't you?
That's right. That's, again, the Descartes Formation, and the mountain we call is Smoky Mountain, and we've nicknamed it Smoky Mountain. Now, we won't climb that mountain since the terrain is too steep, but we will sample some of the debris that is rolled off the mountain at a crater called Cat Crater, which is on the flank of the mountain.
Mm-hmm.
At that point, we will then return with some intermediate stops in the Cayley Formation, and then that'll finish us up on our stay at Descartes.
Okay, thanks, Charlie, for going through that third excursion of the moon for us and the things which seem to be the highlights to you. Charles Duke, Lunar Module Pilot of Apollo 16. This is Rhett Turner. Charlie, this has got to be the most exciting thing that ever happened to you in your life. If you can hold yourself down, how do you really feel about what it's going to mean to your life and future?
Well, I don't think that our lives, anybody that lands on the moon will ever be the same. It has to be the unique experience of your entire life. I feel very strongly about responsibility to divulge and give to the public and to the people who are interested as much information as I can. And I hope we get a chance to visit many countries to tell the people this experience, because it's unique. And I'm so proud and honored to have been selected for the crew that I just hope that we can give a good account of ourselves on the moon and when we get back, so that we can bring everybody a little bit closer to that one unique experience of exploring a distant heavenly body.
Charles Duke, Lunar Module Pilot of Apollo 16. This is Rhett Turner in Houston.